the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Charlie McCarron.
I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And today we're going to talk about Star Wars X-Wing, the third in our series on miniature war games. And X-Wing is one that, you know, looks really cool on the table because you have the ships as miniatures that are mounted on plastic holders. And much like in other war games, you're deciding beforehand which ships to bring into battle. And there's a certain amount of points usually that you can assign towards your fleet, usually between like 3 and 6 or something ships.
Yeah.
This one is still new to me, but I have played a couple times now.
And we had someone teach us. Don't worry.
Yep. And the basic gameplay, though, is you're moving the ships physically in the space based on... You have kind of like ruler-type things that you place in front of your ship.
Templates,
yeah. That some are you're moving straight ahead, some are you're curving, some you're doing like a sharp turn, and sometimes you're doing crazy moves, like U-turns.
Flipping around.
Yeah,
flipping. Turning and flipping.
Yep. Yeah. You're also trying to navigate through asteroids, which are placed out randomly on the table, and space junk, and... what you do, it's 1v1 generally, and you can set your movement on a dial, and then both players are going to reveal their movement dials. And the cool thing is that each ship has different movement options. So, like, if you're piloting a big ship, for example, it's going to be less mobile. And the little ships, meanwhile, can do, like, crazier turns. Some turns stress you out, meaning you're not going to be able to do as many actions with your ship. And other elements, there's dice rolling for combat. You're always able to attack if you're within range and if you have if you're pointed in the right direction. Though there's exceptions to all of this, where, you know, you can have a gun turret swing around and... the main way you win is by taking out the other ships, though there are different scenarios you can do. And you're trying to not basically pilot yourself off the edge of space, a.k.a. the edge of the table. And this play was very funny to me because I thought I was dead within the first few turns when I realized, ooh, I'm piloting the Millennium Falcon straight off the edge of the table. But somehow I managed to just...
Make that turn.
Yeah, make the turn just in time.
I did not make the turn with my big ship and ended up fleeing in the last round of combat. I could have won had I turned around in time, but...
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot more to the game. There's all sorts of... you could add in pilots. You could... you can use, like, special weapons. Even X-Wing has a special card that's, like... for the X-Wing ship, the S-foils can be closed or open. And this is for people who really want to get deep into a game. This is that kind of a game. I know there's been like big tournaments and things like that.
Oh, sure.
But we were playing kind of just like the more basic mode.
Yeah, and, we had 3 ships, I think, each pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Very chill version.
Mm-hmm.
Also smaller tables, so I think that was a good choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say that I was a bit surprised in a good way because the theme of spaceships flying around,
yeah,
it didn't sound to me like it would be that exciting compared to like, oh, I've got, you know, dragons fighting mummies or whatever.
Because like AKA HeroScape,
yes,
right. AKA, first game,
it doesn't sound like
you
hold a candle to HeroScape.
Well, just because ships don't seem as colorful and different,
right.
from each other. And, you know, part of the fun of these games is you have a bunch of colorful characters. The thing that really struck me about this game is how the restrictions on momentum and from facing just really add a lot to the game. Because in a lot of these games, like Heroescape and Necromolds, and I'm sure most other minis games, you don't really care that much about facing.
Yeah.
And you don't need to worry about momentum. You know, you can just move whichever direction
you
want.
Then I attack. Mm-hmm.
And I really liked what momentum and facing added to this game. Like, obstacles were way more meaningful than they usually are in these games. Usually it's pretty easy to just walk around them or shoot across them. And in this game, it's like, okay, I need to avoid these and not run into them. And that's harder than it sounds.
And running into them isn't, like, truly detrimental. It doesn't hurt you that much unless you roll poorly. But yeah, it's really interesting how dynamic the space becomes, even though you just have, like, a few, you know, two-dimensional asteroids out there. And you could obviously make those three-dimensional, too, and just have a lot of fun making a really cool experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's really interesting.
It has really changed how I see, like, games about ships or spaceships or, you know, anything that tends to move in a... Or planes, I guess.
Sure.
Planes are another theme that before I found kind of boring.
Yeah.
And now I'm thinking about, like, momentum and movement restrictions. Like,
these could move tighter, you know, turn tighter.
Yeah.
Yeah, have less stress develop on these turns or these maneuvers. Different actions allocated for each type of vehicle. Like, oh, this is actually quite a lot to chew on. This is great.
It adds a really interesting dimension to gameplay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the interesting thing with this one versus other games that might let you measure out beforehand, my friend Chris, who taught us, was like, nope, this is very much you choose your what you're going to do for your movement, and you can't, like, measure in advance. You are just committed to it, so you kind of have to eyeball it and see if you're going to be in range or not, which is pretty fun.
It's like you're a pilot.
Well, it's simultaneous movement selection, kind of. That's how I'd say it, because it's not action selection until you've moved.
Right.
And then you choose
then
which
you
action
get to
you
do. Yeah, the actions one by one.
And then once the action's done, everyone does their action, and then you go on to the attack phase or the engagement phase. So I like, usually phases, I'm like, well, we don't need that many phases, right? But this, the phases all felt very important. It's like, you know, I got past your ship, and now I'm out of the line of sight when they move into the engagement phase. That feels really clever and tactical, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I like that attacks are just automatic.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what you do.
Who are you going to attack?
Yeah. As long as they're within your
arc
field of view or whatever you'd call it. As long as they're in whatever your attack angle is and they're within range, you get to shoot them. You don't need to, like, take a special action to do it. Or
use up one of your actions where you have all these cool actions you can do.
Yeah, it's just
replacing it with an attack. It's like, oh, well.
It's assumed that everyone's going to attack, and that's fine.
What other cool thing do you want to do with the attack? And I love having the cool things you get to do with attacks. That's
great. There's things like focus. You can add a focus token, which is going to help you with re-rolling, essentially. Like, one of the dice, die faces
enhances your die face,
Yep. And then there's also targeting another
ship.
Lock on,
and you need to do that for proton torpedoes, for example.
Yep.
But yeah, there's all sorts of cool little effects, and it's I like what you're saying. You always attack, and then you get to do a fun thing of many fun things you want to do, but you only get to do one of them.
Right.
Lock on, by the way, is super thematic.
Oh yeah.
And the interesting thing is some of these statuses just last one round and some of them persist. Like, when you lock on, you put a token on their ship and it stays there until you use it to reroll an attack or use a special ability that requires a lock on token.
The thing that I like about this game too is it really feels like you're trying to predict what your opponent's going to do.
Moment to moment.
Even though you kind of know, well, the it's just one decision per ship of what they're going to do for their move, but mm-hmm. it feels so important. And that's the fun part, is like predicting, ooh, how far are they going to go? Am I going to be able to like do a U-turn so I can, aim back at them? Or are they going to end up behind me and then like, right. shoot me from behind?
No, I didn't realize until now. It has a lot of similarities to Battletech, which I've played mostly the video game version of it, but facing is super important in that game. You have like a squad of four, you know, mechs. It has a lot of similarities. I didn't even think about that till just now. Yeah, momentum, movement. Okay. It's really interesting.
I haven't played that one.
They obviously have the tabletop version as well.
Battletech has momentum mechanics?
It can develop heat, like movement, like smaller units move a lot faster, so they're able to like traverse and get to places easier. If you go too overboard, it can cause some damage to your mech.
Right.
So like, there's like risk reward for kind of positioning yourself.
Speaking of heat or stress,
yeah.
I found stress very interesting.
Absolutely.
In this game, it reminded me at first a little bit of Heat
from Heat
the game about racing cars, but it's actually a little bit different than that. Heat in games like Heat and Cobalt, Cobalt Core, is based on risk. Like you're taking on a type of debt that builds up and exposes you to the possibility of disaster. So it's sort of a push your luck type thing.
Sure.
But I think this type, the stress in this game makes me think more about debt in games like Le Havre or Slipways, where it's not increasing your risk. It's just something that needs to be paid back later. The way it works in this game, to elaborate a little bit, is some of your actions will give you stress, and then some other actions, like maneuvers. It's mainly based on the maneuvers. Other maneuvers will remove stress. So, like, the maneuvers that are hard give you stress. The maneuvers that aren't hard for your ship relieve stress, and then some of your actions can also give you stress. And having stress just means you can't take actions. It's restricting your abilities. And right. I actually really like that. Because
but not attacking. You still get to attack.
Yes, you still get to attack.
Which is great.
You just don't get to use your cool abilities.
Right.
What I like about this compared to the systems of debt that I've seen in other games is that quite often debt is just something you need to worry about by the end of the game. Mm-hmm. Like Le Havre especially. I think of Le Havre where you like taking on debt because it lets you fund your engine. And so you go deep into debt, and at the end of the game, you just go to the local court and get it all forgiven. But you don't really need to worry about it until then.
Interesting, yeah.
It's often about pushing off things until the end of the game. What I like about this game is while you have the debt, your actions are restricted. Mm-hmm. So the debt is something that needs to be paid back as soon as possible, because it is limiting your actions.
Right.
And I think that is a really good consequence for debt compared to just, you know, let's just delay the cost until the end of the game.
Yeah.
It makes it much more urgent.
But on the other hand, the debt dies with your plane, so or your ship. So if you're...
like student loan debt.
Yeah, like if one of your ships dies, which is can happen very quickly, it's like, well, that's all right. I'll focus on my other ships that didn't have to... Yeah. Yeah.
Weren't deep in stress and
yep.
about to die anyway.
Yeah, it's very localized to each ship. Kind of like the planetary debt in Slipways. That one also has some urgency, but that's only because if you leave it for too long, it becomes permanent.
Sure. Mm. So one of my favorite things about kind of maneuvering and the spatial aspect is when you collide with another ship. You don't, like, actually run into them. You don't cause damage, but you make it so they can't shoot you and you can't shoot them. And then I believe you lose your action when you run into them. And so, like, it's supposed to show, like, you going above this other ship or going below it in space, because space is much larger than a little table. So, it just really helps abstract that a little bit. And then you're trying to guess, like, okay, what are they going to do in response to this? They're going to go really far ahead. Do I want to try and, like, dodge out of the way so I can continue to move? It gives you a little bit more flexibility in how you're trying to kind of stop their ships or redirect their ships so they do something else. I got toyed with a little bit and made it. That's what made me actually go off the table before, is he kept putting his ship right in front of me. So I kept running into him, so I couldn't complete my move.
Oh.
I'm like, oh, that is brilliant.
Wow.
Yeah, just
and
like,
so, yeah.
That was deliberate?
I think it was. He just kept like pulling me along. I'm just trying to move so I can recover the stress so I can actually do things. It's like, nope.
That's funny.
So yeah, just being able to kind of control the battlefield literally with movement and then trying to find a way to puzzle your way around it again. It's really neat.
Yeah, yeah. I think something that's cool about this is like the emergence strategies that come from being like physical on the table.
No.
And like that, you know, maybe you notice like certain movements you can do. Maybe that's like, oh, if I like hide around this asteroid,
I
don't know.
Well, and like you were talking about earlier, how the asteroids really add kind of a tactical aspect to it too, especially like dimensionally on the table. If you shoot through an asteroid, you actually give bonus defense to who you're attacking. And then if they're further away, that also gives them a bonus defense, unless they're within range. And so, like, it's really interesting how you can kind of manipulate the surroundings and the situation so you can have higher defense or higher attack, depending on what's going on. Like, but it's very simple. It's very straightforward. You understand it instantly. It doesn't require a lot of, like, well, then you roll an extra, like, specific asteroid die in addition to that other defense die. Like, no, it's like just an extra defense die.
It's also notable that it's not like it blocks. There's no blocking of line of sight. You can shoot through anything. It's just you might get a penalty.
It's harder to do so.
But you're always able to do the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Which makes sense for the theme. I mean, you can't really hide in space.
Right. But, you can't hide in space.
Yeah.
You can fall off the edge of space. Though,
you can apparently. Fall off the edge of space.
That's the only thing.
Because space is flat.
Like, okay. Yeah. I mean, everything else kind of, I think, makes sense thematically. And I do think it's funny like that. I always think of the game Eclipse also, where I got like stuck in space behind, because we ran out of tiles. I was like stuck behind someone else. But, you know, that's okay. I actually do like that risk of falling off the table, though.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe that's my takeaway, that always having like some secondary loss condition in a game or secondary end game thing that's just like kind of funny.
Well, and too. If you're able to like manipulate the actual like physical spacing and get someone to retreat by just frustrating them enough, like that's really, you know, it's not, especially if your ships are like really wounded or something and you just swarm that one ship and they can't get away from you, so they can't shoot you because they're all touching you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't know what to do here. And then you have enough time to actually recover and get a new strategy. Like, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. And I don't know. We only obviously saw more basic ships, but there's probably something out there in the game that might make your opponent do different types of moves. Or
there's a lot of content we didn't see. We just saw the very basics.
Yeah.
Because just to wrap that thought up, I realized like, usually it's only your fault if you fall off the table, at least from what I saw. Yeah. Like, you probably could have planned out this whole thing, but, you know, maybe you were distracted by what else you had to do.
Yeah.
But sorry, yeah, you were...
Oh, well, I was just going to say the game has a lot of replayability. Obviously, you know, there's tons of cards. And one interesting thing, and I think one useful thing for designing a minis game when thinking about replayability, is that minis are expensive, but things that are not minis are not. So in this game, there are ships, and the ships come with cards, and so that's going to be expensive to collect. But then there are also, I don't remember what they're called, but they're like...
The upgrades? Or...
Yeah, they're little modifier cards that you attach to ships, which is cool in its own right. But the really great thing about that is that you don't need new minis for the modifiers.
Right.
So like, there's this whole part of the game where... So for example, like Proton... Proton torpedoes? Photon or Proton?
Is it Photon? I know, I thought about that after I said it.
I don't remember. I'm going to say
Proton.
I'm going to say Proton torpedoes, because Photon makes
light proton. Yeah,
The Star Wars nerds out there, I've been watching Star Wars right now.
Like, I should know this right now. I've been watching the whole like series.
But okay, let's assume they're proton torpedoes.
I like that assumption.
You can attach those to a ship, and now your ship has a new attack that it can make in the forward cone, which may or may not be its normal, the normal direction that it can face. And there are other upgrades too. Like there are characters who are now aboard the ship and give it some ability, or
pilots.
Yeah, there's all sorts of modifiers.
Yeah, and also the ships themselves have base. Like I was piloting something that was like the Millennium Falcon, but it wasn't called the Millennium Falcon. It was like the basic version,
the actual.
Like, and then I think there was a Chewbacca version. And
you're saying there's different versions of the ships.
Yeah. Okay. And they're all different values of,
but like they have the same movement, like spinner, right?
I think they have the same,
which I think is cool.
But they have different stats for if you want like the upgraded version in your fleet.
Okay, right. So that's another way you can reuse the same minis.
Yeah.
And I think this is really good. I do something a little bit like this in my game Junkernauts, where I have cards that modify the normal behavior of the bots and the tools. And so, you know, even though it's expensive to have new models, it's very cheap to have a lot of modifiers that change the way the models work.
Kind of new content for each thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a great way to get more replayability out of less plastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Combos,
I think Necromolds really tried to push that envelope and just not have any plastic at all. It's just Play-Doh. We can get back to that in the wrap-up episode, though.
Necromolds, I think more specifically solves the kind of problem that Heroescape had, where I guess this isn't a problem from Heroescape's perspective, but common units, you want a lot of them. You know, you need more than one squad of zombies, so you have to buy another copy of it, and you have to keep buying them. And in Necromolds, if you have one copy of a unit, you have as many copies as you like.
Right.
Which is nice for the consumer, but maybe less profitable.
Maybe less profitable.
Yeah.
What do you guys have for takeaways?
You know, it's hard because I felt like the two main things I talked about were really important for me. Or maybe three things. I think I really want to go with the simplicity around kind of targeting and range. And I think it's really important. Like in this game, you know, you have a ruler that has three kind of brackets for the range. Each one is an equal size. And then you can kind of visualize on the board how far away things are. But it's hard to know for sure until you fully move using the little templates to actually get in your head like, okay, that will put me in range two, range one. So when you get into that range one and you're attacking and they can't attack you, you feel really good and like you're getting extra attack die. That's awesome. And so like just having a very simple metric to have for range and different bonuses on that range and just have it be very simple and dynamic.
Well, yeah, and I guess I didn't think about this, but it's two different levels of obscurity. Of you move your ship and then you shoot. They're two different distances and the windiness of it makes it harder to
truly predict
if it's going to work out or not.
Well, they might have, if they have a small ship, they're just going to like blast out of there, maybe move four or five.
Yep.
It's like, oh, wow, you're not even in my range anymore. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to attack this asteroid, I guess, which you can't do. So, yeah, I really like that. And just the simplicity of like, you know, you're behind an asteroid. You get to add a defense die. You know, you're behind two asteroids. That's two defense die. Like it feels just so natural and you just understand instantly. Mm-hmm. I think it's great.
Yeah. I guess my takeaway is the way that the game models momentum, which is that it frames it as a choice rather than something that happens in upkeep. So if you're making a game set in space, one very you want to model momentum, right? Like ships are going through space. They keep traveling in a straight line unless they change directions with their rockets. That's kind of a core part of your assumptions about how space works. Things keep moving. And the obvious way to model this is that you have some upkeep phase and, you know, you track your momentum, right? Like, mm-hmm. you're going at 3 units of speed. So during the upkeep phase, you're going to move forward 3 spaces, right? And this is obnoxious and tedious and not fun. And what I really like about this game is it reframes it as you need to choose how you are going to move.
Right.
And the momentum of your ship is reflected in the choices that you have. So, for example, if you have a big, huge ship, you may have the option to not move,
yeah.
but it's going to cause you stress, representing, you know, you have to do quite a lot to stop it. Whereas if you want to have it coast forward 4 spaces, that is going to relieve stress. Your ship is really good at that type of movement. And so the game is encouraging you to keep the ship moving, but every movement is a choice rather than something that happens in upkeep, and it makes it feel not tedious.
Yeah.
So, and I think this is actually a really, really great way to model movement in space in a game. Mm-hmm. And it makes me want to revisit when we did the Auto Battler series.
Oh, yeah.
I tried revisiting a very old idea of mine, which was to make sort of a board game version of Super Fight from Star Control, the Urquan Masters, where you have 2 spaceships fighting each other, and the spaceships have lots of different powers. So I wanted to make an auto battler of that, and that didn't work out too well. But now I kind of want to revisit it with this new understanding of how to model momentum.
Sure.
And I think Star Control is now, they've rebranded as Free Stars, or the original designers had. So, very good game. But, I might revisit my Star Control / Free Stars board game awesome. With this.
Cool.
Yeah, honestly, that momentum piece is a really, really cool part of the game. And I wasn't even thinking about it, you know, in a lot of, like, tactical or... miniature war game style games, you end up like maybe having a sniper, like when we did HeroScape. I had a sniper. You could like just pick off things from a very extreme distance. In X-Wing, you have maybe a range of 3, and that's the whole range. And so you're constantly moving. You can't have someone just like sitting behind the asteroids trying to pick people off. Mm-hmm. Like they are actively out there in danger, in threat, constantly moving, changing the scene. Like, yeah, I really like that action. It makes it really dynamic. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I like that maneuverability. That's great.
Speaking of maneuvers, that's my takeaway, is the dials, the maneuver dials. And at first I was like, well, this is a little ridiculous that there's like, you know, in our collection of tons of ships, they each have a dial that are, you know, not that different from each other, but actually when I started to look at them, I'm like, oh yeah, it actually gives like a decently different flavor to all the ships, because they each have, I don't know, 12 or more.
Yeah, maybe 16 at most.
Different maneuvering abilities. And it feels, I think, just like in a game, sometimes it's not that you're even changing that many things, but... just having a little bit of asymmetry gives you a feel that, like, oh, this is going to be a different play experience.
Oh, this guy's going to be really good at this type of maneuver. I need to, like, figure out how to make use of that.
Yep. And you kind of, because of the fact that you're using, you know, around 3 or 4 ships in your fleet, you do actually notice a difference between them. Yeah. And you can feel the difference of a big ship versus a small ship. And you start to notice the differences more than like the basic moves. It's like, oh cool, the Millennium Falcon has this kind of like key move that my other ships don't. And I just remember feeling that, you know, like, all right, that's the fun reveal. Like, and any time in a game where you get to reveal something that feels cool,
you activated my trap card.
Yeah. Yep. So
yeah, it really did feel like the ships handled differently, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you want for like a dog fighting.
Yeah.
Is that what you call it? Like a dog fighting minis dog. Game?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, we enjoyed X-Wing, as you can tell. So tune in next week for our wrap up bonus episode on miniatures war games.
I'm about to turn this pop filter to a sneeze filter.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.